Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio, and you want to talk about the wrong science, the wrong decisions, the wrong conclusions.
Not that we're judging.
There's all of that going on right now in the world of coyotes. And to digest what's happening, what's wrong with it, we've got the founder of Project Coyote, Camilla Fox, on the line. She's also affiliated with the Animal Welfare Institute, does, I believe, some good consulting work out there. We're thrilled to have her. It's a complicated discussion. And, you know, I'm also interested to talk about what's the psychology. I think there was an article in Psychology Today.
Yeah, Dr.
About
Mark Beckoff has published some words out there.
What does all that have to do with coyotes? So it's going to be an interesting and complicated conversation. Welcome back to Animal Wise Radio, Camilla.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, we're kind of hot on this issue for a variety of reasons, which you will flesh out for us as we have this interview.
But short and quick answer is there's been some efforts to add bounties to coyotes in Minnesota and other places.
And beyond. And so we'll get to that. But we wanted to just start with the kind of basic conversation about Project Coyote, how it got started and why. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, we're a national nonprofit organization, and we're a coalition of scientists and educators, essentially promoting compassionate conservation and coexistence between people, coyotes, and other wildlife. And we do this primarily through humane education, science, and advocacy. And I started Project Coyote in 2008 and did so after working in both the environmental and animal protection fields. And I saw a real need for a voice and advocacy on behalf of coyotes and other much maligned and misunderstood predators.
So that was the basis
of starting the organization.
Well, I have to say I thank you for doing this work, because I think that it seems like we are having kind of a national trend whereby there's been certain protections in place for threatened species, some of the apex predators, some of the bigger animals that we've lived among. And the coyote is one that when we first had you on the show, I wasn't hearing a whole lot about coyotes in the news here in Minnesota, but it seems like there's been an acceleration around people writing about coyote sightings, or this is happening or that is happening, and certainly our urban areas are spreading and spreading and spreading, and we're going to run into them more. The focus of your organization, it's not just education, but it's like, how do we make policy to live side by side with these animals? It seems like it's such a needed thing right now, given that we're bumping into them because of where we're going. But policy nationally and just kind of the habits of these animals don't seem to be in sync at all.
Absolutely not. In fact, we're really seeing a backlash at the federal and state level against wildlife. And it's very disappointing for all of us who work in this field, because we really see, you know, we had high hopes for the Obama administration that we would be able to progress on the wildlife and conservation front. And in fact, we're finding that we're regressing and making many steps backwards, particularly when you look at, as you mentioned, the legislation around large carnivores. And the wolf is a perfect example right now. There's intense litigation and legislation against wolves. And in fact, there are three federal bills right now that would remove protections, federal protections for wolves. And wolves have been protected under the Endangered Species Act since the 70s, and so this would remove their federal protections and essentially potentially eviscerate the Endangered Species Act, which is our strongest federal law protecting wildlife. So this is very disappointing, particularly under a Democratic administration, and really reflects what's going on for predators nationwide.
It's sort of frightening to me, because really if you look at the wildlife conversation nationally or even globally, we seem to be sort of a schizophrenic culture. On one hand, we've got our mouths agape watching as we see record-breaking extinctions worldwide and in the United States. You know, species are disappearing from the planet faster than ever before in the history of the world, just about. They're calling this time in our in the world history, you know, the seventh great mass extinction. You know, where human activity on the planet is having a greater impact than the meteors that wiped out the dinosaurs, for example. And then on the flip side of it, we're sitting here, you know, making these bizarre policies around, you know, trying to exterminate species with no rational science or thought behind it. And those two conversations seem to be kind of schizophrenic from my perspective. Do you have...
You're not alone in that perspective, and it's something that we're dealing with and have been dealing with. I mean, predators are a perfect example of a schizophrenia in this country. We've been vilifying them for over... two centuries, I mean, pretty much since the European settlers colonized the Americas, they've viewed predators as a threat to livestock and to species they hunt for game. And we have been waging war against predators with lethal snares, traps, poisons, aerial gunning. And we know now through the science that, ethics aside, that this is really ineffective in terms of reducing. When we look at coyotes,
we'll pick the conversation up
right
there when we come back from this break. We'll be back with
that. Women steady coming after you. Women steady coming after me. Seems like everybody wanna go for self and don't wanna respect boundaries. Telling you all those lies just to get on your side. But I must admit there was a couple secrets I held inside. But just know that I tried.
You are wisely tuned into Animal Wise Radio, streaming, blogging, and podcasting at animalwiseradio.com.
Out of this noise, here comes the stillness. Out of this chaos, here comes the order. Out of this language, out of this language, out of these words. Out of this noise.
Hi, this is Mike Fry.
And this is Beth Nelson.
And you are listening to Animal Wise Radio. Wow, Camilla Fox is bringing some order to the conversation around coyotes.
Well, chaotic ourselves today. So. Yeah.
And it's a complicated discussion. As we were talking about in the first segment, there's been some kind of hysteria around all predators pretty much for a couple hundred years in the United States. You know, people like to vilify them, but then on the other hand, we'll, you know, in a sort of schizophrenic way, we will, you know, hold them up as these majestic, wonderful symbols of freedom, but then we try to kill them and wipe them out. Extermination plans don't seem to work or be effective. And I would argue, Camilla, you kind of went out on that theme when we left, you know, for the break, you know, but I would argue, you know, anybody who puts even a little bit of thought into why those extermination programs are ineffective, all they have to do is remember back to basic high school biology. You know,
lots of people sleep through that class. Though, Mike,
a lot. I mean, the things that affect a population, that limit a population, are things like, you know, available habitat, available food supply, shelter, water. Those are the things that limit a population. And, you know, extermination programs typically don't address those things.
Could you give us a little bit of the science that has been collected around that type of control mechanism, Camilla?
Sure. Well, the control that I was starting to mention before that's been really waged against predators in North America for approximately two centuries, really has largely focused on indiscriminate lethal control methods. This includes neck snares, poisons, aerial gunning, and what we know through science is that these have largely been ineffective in reducing populations, particularly when we talk about coyote populations. Indiscriminate control can lead to a vacuum, a territorial vacuum, and nature abhors a vacuum, so that territorial niche will soon be filled by more coyotes, whether coyotes emigrating from another area or the remaining coyotes. And this is an interesting fact about what we've learned about coyotes, is that when their populations are reduced, those remaining coyotes may increase their litter size, and there may be greater pup survival it's the prey and habitat exist.
Well, it makes sense if we go back to high school biology. Remember, if there's a limit set to the population that's based on the available food supply and the habitat, and they're at that kind of equilibrium. Well, if you remove one, you've changed the equilibrium. There's more resources for those pups to survive into. It only makes sense.
Absolutely, and we do know that, and so people throw up their hands and say, well, why do we persist with this same kind of methodology in terms of predator control against not just coyotes, but wolves, bears, mountain lions, bobcats, foxes, all are targets of our federal government through the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services Program, and this is an agency that's functioned under the Animal Damage Control Act. And that act was passed back in 1931. We're about to have the 80th anniversary of this act, and it remains virtually unchanged. And under that act, over 100,000 predators are killed every year in the U.S. alone through the methods I mentioned of aerial gunning, snaring, poisoning. And we know through the science that this is simply ineffective, but it's job security. And that's really what we're dealing with, is job security and generations of ranchers who have been accustomed to these various subsidies.
Well, and since you brought up the USDA, what we're talking about predators, but I would like to say that they have other programs not targeting at predators. You know, like when the red-winged blackbirds were raining out of the sky. You know, we connected the dots back to large-scale, you know, eradication programs for red-winged blackbirds and starlings and other seed eaters. Again,
considered nuisance animals around feedlots and
so such. So putting out massive amounts of poison, again, ineffective, doesn't address the problem, could actually be causing other sorts of damage to the environment. We've got a national animal control system that is just completely off its wheels. And
our tax dollars are supporting it. Is that correct, Camille?
That's absolutely correct. It's over $120 million a year that taxpayers pay to subsidize that program. And very good point about the birds, because that really, it's the same agency that was killing the birds as kills the predators. And as you mentioned, poison. And of course, that poison can have many different effects, secondary, tertiary, in the environment. So we are dealing with an agency that is waging war against wildlife, using methods that are ecologically unsound, ethically indefensible, and we're paying for it.
Well, and so if you look at policies or methods that can be more effective, what do those look like?
Well, just staying on the predator control issue. Where I live here in Northern California in Marin County, which is just north of San Francisco, we actually have a very unique program. And the program started as a result of community concern about the use of these poisons that USDA Wildlife Services was planning to test in our county, specifically a poison, a very lethal poison called Compound 1080. And they were planning to experiment with this poison in the county, actually three northern counties. And the Coalition of Conservation and Animal Protection Groups got together, said, we don't want this, and then also learned about the other types of methods that were being employed to kill native wildlife in the community. And essentially, through a process working with the local ranchers, working with the Marin County Department of Agriculture, we came up with an alternative program. So we essentially booted out that USDA Wildlife Services program that was largely lethally based. We said we don't want to be subsidizing that, and we took the monies that went to subsidize that program, and instead we put it in a cost-share program called the Marin Livestock and Wildlife Protection Program. And it's a very unique program. There's no other program like it in the U.S., and what it does is it assists ranchers with obtaining non-lethal methods, so things like livestock guard animals such as dogs and llamas, and better fencing, night corrals, and it helps them with the long-term process of essentially coexisting with predators, recognizing their important ecological role, but reducing conflicts in an effective and ecologically sound way.
That seems radical.
Yay!
That's so extreme, a solution that works. Oh, sorry, I had to go there.
Well, yeah.
No, it's exciting. You know, it's a model that, and that's part of what Project Coyote does, is we work both in the agricultural and the urban front, and we support and promote models of coexistence, so not just with coyotes, but with wolves and other predators, to show that there are other ways, and we can coexist. But it takes individual and community responsibility, and it takes recognizing that these animals do play a very vital ecological role in our ecosystem.
And I also believe, you know, we talked about it, and I think it was sort of described in this article we mentioned previously that was in, I think it was Psychology Today, that, you know, much of the quote-unquote damage or harm or hype around these predators, especially at the moment coyotes, is really exaggerated. There's a lot of media hysteria around them, and I think because of that hysteria, if someone sees a coyote on their property and then they find a dead baby livestock something or other, they assume there's a connection there, or they see the coyote feeding on, you know, a dead piece of livestock, they assume the coyote killed it. But when, in fact, oftentimes that's not the case. I mean, often, you know, coyotes will certainly scavenge. And I think people don't even realize how small they are. You know, my idea, when I see a coyote that weighs, 30 pounds, maybe, the notion that they're going to really be causing much damage to large livestock is, you know, kind of a crazy thought in my head.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that coyotes do prey on sheep, but the reality is that it's our responsibility, you know, whether we're talking about domestic animals, dogs and cats, or domestic livestock, we have a responsibility to practice good animal husbandry, mm-hmm. to protect our domestic animals. So that's where the focus should be, is requiring that. And the problem with this agency that I mentioned, USDA Wildlife Services, is they don't require that. So they come out with their hired guns, their trappers, their aerial gunners. They shoot the predators, but they don't require that ranchers adopt effective animal husbandry practices. And that's very problematic. And so there should be a tier that if you're receiving assistance, and that assistance should be ecologically sound and should assist ranchers, as we do here in Marin, with long-term effective conflict deterrence, that they actually practice good animal husbandry techniques. And there are many ranchers who actually do this, and we're seeing, you know, we're part of what Project Coyote does is we work with those ranchers who do recognize the importance of predators and do practice predator-friendly ranching practices. So it's not to vilify ranchers out there, but it's to say that we've been inculcated in a system, in a mindset mm-hmm. that views predators as bad, and that there's only one way for addressing conflicts with predators.
Well, then one of the other, I'm sorry, Beth wants to go.
No, go ahead.
This is kind of taking this focus off of USDA, but at the state level here in Minnesota, we've got the Department of Natural Resources that also has, you know, wildlife quote-unquote control methods. And one of the things that I'm most familiar with here because of my former work at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center are these goose roundups that people do. You know, and if you look historically at goose populations here, they're dramatically lower than they have been, you know, at their peak in the past. But they hire these folks who do the roundups to also do the assessment of the population. So they set up this sort of conflict
Fox
of interest.
Fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah, right,
so
and
speak.
So they've got these folks who have a conflict of interest being the experts who are, and I think the same thing happens in the USDA program.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you just need to look at many of the studies that have been conducted, and it's by this very same agency that's staying in business doing lethal control. So there's definitely a conflict of interest there.
I'd like to just shift the conversation slightly, though, to where we started in the first segment, which is there seems to be quite a backlash, and some of it includes bounties. Minnesota has introduced a House bill and a Senate bill to reintroduce bounties, and in
on coyotes
and up in Nova Scotia and in Saskatchewan, there have been some pretty dire consequences to bounties that go beyond the borders of Saskatchewan, for example. This in light of what you've talked about, the science around the populations and good husbandry practices amongst our farmers and ranchers. And so how do we cope with this? It seems like there's fast track, but we're fast tracking this kind of stuff right now.
And that's exactly what is happening. And as you mentioned, the Minnesota bill, which is HF 621, it was introduced in the House on February 21st. And then there's a companion bill in the Senate, Senate Bill 228. And as you mentioned, this would essentially legalize bounties, not just on coyotes, but actually
beaver
beaver as well. So it would allow county governments by resolution to authorize the killing of these animals by all legal methods. And the problem is that we know scientifically that bounties are ineffective. You know, studies across the world have demonstrated that bounties are ineffective. And we do have other governments that are, in fact, saying no to bounties. For example, in Virginia, which does allow bounties, there are several, and I have a government memo right in front of me, several counties that have opted not to move forward with bounties because they recognize and acknowledge that they're not effective. So, and the same goes for different provinces in Canada, and it gets back to that schizophrenia where one state enacts a bill to authorize bounties and another says we recognize that they're ineffective. So part of the way to the antidote is to try to get to these legislators to show them the science that bounties are not effective, that we know this through decades of research, and that, in fact, there is an alternative way, and not just an alternative way, but that ecologically they're absolutely counterproductive, that there is a role for these predators, whether they're bounties against wolves, bounties against coyotes. We need these predators, and we should not be adopting legislation to allow for bounties.
Well, and I find the irony about this is if you look at who many of the legislators are who are putting forward these expensive and ineffective programs, you know, they're the same legislators who are arguing for smaller government and saying government's bad, we're overspending, we've got to control our costs, but then they're offering these programs that are not going to work, that are very expensive.
Absolutely, and that's been shown also in the science in terms of the cost-benefit analyses that these are ineffective and often very expensive. There was actually a bounty in Saskatchewan that resulted in the killing of 71,000 coyotes, and I think it was a six-month time period. And after the bounty and after the ministry shelled out more than $1.4 million to participants of the bounty, they were certainly less defensive of having adopted and implemented this bounty. And they recognized that after an investigation by the CBC that coyotes were being laundered in from surrounding provinces.
Yeah, and I think you even suggested from some of the national park areas up there.
Exactly, exactly. So the way it worked was essentially people who participated in the bounty had to submit coyote paws. For every paw they submitted, they would get $20. And the CBC did an investigation, and they found basically a carcass dump of coyotes with their paws sawed off. And this was right at the Alberta-Saskatchewan border. And so that led to a deeper investigation. And the ministry had to admit that these were animals that were essentially killed for the Saskatchewan bounty and then laundered into the state. And you know, they ended up having to pay $1.4 million for it.
Wow. Well, if people want more information, they can find more at projectcoyote.org. Thanks, Camilla. We'll stay in touch with you about what's happening with all these various bills and more. We'll be back with more Animal Wise right after this.
From the darkness, it's